Have you ever just stopped to think about how fast technology is reshaping everything? It feels like, I don't know, every single day there's some new AI thing popping up.
Right. It's relentless.
Yeah. But the real story, I think, isn't just that AI is changing things. It's more like it's becoming this essential partner, especially in places you might not expect, like design and development. How's it even doing that?
Well, that's exactly what we're going to dive into today. We're looking at the real.
Okay, so our mission here is pretty clear. Cut through all the noise, all the hype, and show you how AI is genuinely making design faster, smarter, and yeah, more creative too. We also want to pull back the curtain a bit on what it really means to like build with AI and why the data, the stuff powering it, is so critical. The goal really is for you to walk away feeling like you've got a good handle on it, maybe with some surprising facts, definitely some practical insights you can actually use. So the world of UX and UI design, it really has seen a massive shift, hasn't it? AI isn't just, a novelty anymore.
Not at all. It's fundamental now.
It's really changing how designers work. So, okay, let's unpack this. When you talk about AI aiding in UX and UI design, what's the biggest, most dramatic change you're seeing right now?
That's a great question. And it really, I think, comes down to augmenting what humans can do. One of the most immediate impacts, is how AI is automating those repetitive kind of technical tasks. Think about all that initial, well, grunt work in design. You've got AI-powered tools now like Figma AI, Wizard, Framer AI. They can generate entire wireframes, layouts, even interactive prototypes.
Just from text prompts or sketches.
Exactly. Simple text prompts, quick sketches, and it just dramatically speeds up that whole ideation phase. I mean, we're hearing from studios reporting like a 40% cut in ideation time.
Wow, 40%.
And it's not by cutting corners, right? It's by generating maybe hundreds of different concepts they just never have the time to explore manually. It's a huge expansion of creative bandwidth, really.
That's fascinating. So it's not just about automation then, it's really about boosting creativity, helping with ideas. How is AI moving beyond just being efficient to becoming like a real creative partner?
It is a really profound shift. You take large language models, something like ChatGPT, they aren't just for, writing blog posts anymore. For designers, they become this creative sounding board. They can help brainstorm concepts, generate really detailed user personas, even suggest different micro copy or alternative user flows you might not have thought of.
Huh. It's almost like having a tireless assistant.
Exactly. An endlessly patient, incredibly knowledgeable junior designer kind of on tap. And for that rapid exploration piece, you've got tools like Moonchild.ai. They can pump out dozens of design ideas or variations in just minutes. That lets teams iterate incredibly fast and explore way more options than they ever could before.
Okay, so AI's speeding up ideation, boosting creativity. What does this actually mean for making designs that work for people? Is AI helping designers understand users better too?
Oh, absolutely. AI is significantly improving user research and the insights you can get from it. For instance, take user behavior analysis. Tools like Attention Insight use predictive analytics, basically using past data to predict future outcomes and simulated eye tracking.
Simulated eye tracking.
Yeah, it shows which parts of a design will likely grab a user's attention. So designers can make really data-driven decisions about layout before anyone even sees the product. Plus, AI is powering automated testing now. It can analyze how users interact, run A/B tests on different versions super quickly, and give you actionable insights to improve usability, improve engagement. It often catches little issues humans might miss until much, much later.
Okay, that covers the experience side. What about the purely visual stuff, the look and feel? Is AI changing aesthetics, or is it more about making existing styles easier to achieve?
That's a sharp question. And while AI can generate totally new styles, its immediate impact, I'd say, is more often on streamlining the visual and UI design process. You've got platforms like Colormine, Chroma, Designs.ai. They can instantly generate harmonious color palettes, suggest typography combinations. It ensures visual consistency across a whole project.
Right, saves a lot of back and forth.
Oh, massively. I remember projects where we'd spend days agonizing over the perfect color palette. Now, with these tools, it's like having expert color theorists right there. Almost feels like cheating.
I got you.
And then for image and video work, tools like Runway ML can upscale low-res images, zap backgrounds, add creative effects in seconds. It just saves designers hours of manual editing.
Incredible efficiency.
Yeah.
But it's not just about speed, is it? You mentioned making things better for everyone. How's AI helping build more inclusive products?
Yeah, this is a really critical area, personalization and accessibility. AI can dynamically tailor UI elements, maybe the content itself, to individual user preferences or specific needs. That significantly improves both accessibility and inclusivity. Imagine like an interface that instantly adjusts its font size and contrast for someone with low vision.
Or language, maybe?
Or offers content in their preferred language variant, exactly. Some AI tools even automatically scan designs for common accessibility problems, poor color contrast, tiny font sizes, and then suggest immediate fixes. It's honestly a game changer for building truly user-centered products that work for a diverse range of people.
And this isn't all happening in, like, separate AI bubbles, right? It's fitting into existing workflows.
Right.
How seamless is that integration piece?
That's a key point. It has to be seamless to be adopted. And we are seeing deep integration with popular design platforms. Figma, for example, now has AI plugins woven right in for copywriting, translation, automation, image generation. It's becoming a central hub.
Adobe
Sensei, yeah. It's embedded across their Creative Cloud, automating image editing, optimizing layouts, managing assets smartly. The goal isn't replacement, it's empowerment, right where designers already are.
Okay, so let's sum this part up. For designers listening, what are the big takeaways? What's the bottom line on AI's role right now?
I think the overarching insight is AI isn't just an add-on anymore. It's rapidly becoming the co-pilot for the modern designer. It delivers, you know, unprecedented speed by automating manual stuff. It ignites creativity by generating ideas and assets instantly. It helps ensure data-driven decisions through analytics. It enables amazing personalization, fosters greater accessibility, and crucially, it integrates smoothly into the tools they already use. These AI tools, they're not optional anymore. They're really essential for working smarter, faster, more creatively. And that leads to more innovative, more user-centered designs, period.
Okay, so we've really explored how AI is fundamentally changing the game for designers, boosting creativity, making things more efficient. But for those of you maybe thinking, okay, cool, but how are these things actually made? Or maybe even, could I build something like this? Let's shift gears a bit. Let's demystify what we actually mean when we talk about building and using AI tools.
Right. That's a crucial pivot because now we're shifting focus from using AI in, say, design to understanding the mechanics of how these solutions get developed. And essentially, building and using AI tools means applying existing platforms, frameworks, services, all that stuff, to develop, test, and deploy AI applications without having to engineer the core AI models from scratch yourself.
So you don't need to be a deep learning guru.
Exactly. It's about leveraging what's already been built. It really democratizes access to some incredibly powerful AI capabilities.
Okay, so why does that matter to, you know, someone listening? Why should they care about building with AI if they're not a machine learning expert?
It matters hugely because it just dramatically lowers the barrier to entry for AI development. You really don't need that PhD anymore to start creating powerful AI solutions. This approach lets you do rapid prototyping test ideas really quickly, see if they work. And maybe most importantly, it lets you focus on solving the actual problem you care about instead of getting totally bogged down in the really complex, specialized engineering of the AI models themselves.
That makes a lot of sense. Focus on the application, not the deep science. So can you give some concrete examples? What are these building tools we're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. We can sort of group them by what they do. For interactive coding, you've got environments like Jupyter Notebooks or Google Colab. These let you run code bit by bit, see the results immediately. They're especially powerful because they often give you access to GPUs or TPUs, those are specialized chips.
Right, the ones that speed up AI training.
Exactly. They handle the massive calculations AI needs, turning hours into minutes sometimes. Then, for pre-trained models, Hugging Face is just an incredible resource. It's like a giant library, a central hub with, I think it's over 100,000 pre-trained models now, covering language processing, computer vision, audio, you name it. Super useful for tasks like sentiment analysis or image recognition.
100,000 models. Wow.
Yeah. Hugging Face isn't just a library. It's really democratizing access. I mean, a single developer today has more powerful AI tools at their fingertips than a well-funded research lab did maybe 5 years ago. That's the real insight here, I think. A massive power shift. Then for generative AI, the OpenAI Playground is kind of the go-to right now for playing with prompt-based code and text generation, experimenting, and looking ahead, they're talking about OpenAI Nexus as this future collaborative AI workspace. We also have really good AI coding assistants, things like Cursor and Lovable.dev. And actually, Lovable.dev is a great example connecting back to our design discussion.
How so?
Well, Lovable.dev specifically helps test UI and UX design using AI. It assists with debugging, visual validation, even has built-in A/B testing features. So it bridges that gap between building the AI and applying it to design. And finally, for the backend stuff, the data storage, user logins, real-time updates, you have no-code or low-code backends like Supabase or Bolt.new. They let you set up the application infrastructure without writing tons of code.
Okay, quite a toolkit available then.
Yeah.
So once you have access to these tools, how do you use them effectively? Are there best practices?
Yeah, absolutely. A good rule of thumb is always match the tool to the specific task. You wouldn't use a hammer to saw wood, right? So you'd probably go to Hugging Face for language challenge, maybe Colab for interactive coding, Supabase for your database, OpenAI for generating stuff with prompts. Beyond that, it's really vital to write clear, specific prompts or code. Give the AI context, tell it the constraints. Vague instructions get vague results.
Garbage in, garbage out, basically.
Pretty much. And always, always test small first, then scale up. Save versions of your work. And definitely make use of cloud integrations for saving your progress and keeping data secure.
Makes sense. And what about making them run, you know, better? Any optimization tips?
Definitely. One key thing is being highly specific with your prompts, like we just said. Instead of make an app, try something like create a JavaScript form with inputs for name and email styled using CSS. That precision guides the AI much more effectively. And as we mentioned, using those specialized GPU or TPU runtimes in places like Colab can give you a huge speed boost for the really heavy duty tasks.
Right. So you've built something. How do you actually know if it's working properly? And what do you do if it's, well, broken?
Yeah. Evaluation and troubleshooting, super important steps. When you evaluate, you're looking at things like, is the output correct? How fast does it run? Is the code readable? If you're using an API, is it healthy? If you run into problems, the troubleshooting approach depends a bit. If you're coding, check your runtimes, your dependencies. If you're using external services like Hugging Face or OpenAI, double check your API keys. Make sure you haven't hit your usage quota.
The dreaded quota limit.
Happens to the best of us. Sometimes you just need to tweak your prompts if the output isn't quite right. Or you can even use those AI coding assistants we mentioned, like Cursor or the OpenAI Playground, to help you debug your own code.
This whole area is clearly moving incredibly fast. What's coming next? What's on the horizon for building and using AI tools?
We're seeing some really interesting trends. One is a big push towards cross-domain functionality tools that can handle language, vision, audio, code, all within one unified platform, more seamless. Another is adaptive intelligence, where the platforms actually learn from how you interact with them, getting better at giving you what you need over time. And the future definitely points towards these increasingly unified, multimodal AI platforms. Think OpenAI Nexus, Google Vertex AI, Microsoft Azure AI, making really advanced AI capabilities more accessible and, frankly, more powerful than ever before.
Okay, so we've journeyed through AI revolutionizing design. And we've kind of demystified the nuts and bolts of building with AI tools. But none of this, like absolutely none of it, works without its fuel. And that's data, but not just any data, right? It has to be diverse data.
Mm.
So why is diversity in data so incredibly important for AI? And I mean, where does all this information even come from?
You've absolutely hit on maybe the most fundamental piece of the puzzle. Data diversity is paramount. It's critical for several key reasons. Firstly, and maybe most importantly, it reduces bias. If your training data isn't diverse, your AI model will inherit those biases, which can lead to unfair or unreliable outcomes. Critical for fairness.
Right, that makes sense.
Secondly, it improves generalization. Models trained on varied data just perform much better when they encounter new, unseen situations out in the real world. Think of it like this. If you only train an AI driver on sunny days, it's going to struggle in the rain or snow.
Right? Yeah, needs variety.
Exactly. Thirdly, it ensures broad applicability. Like, a language model needs data from many languages and dialects to work globally. A self-driving car needs data from different roads, weather conditions, cities, countries. And finally, it boosts robustness. Diverse data helps AI systems handle those weird edge cases, the rare events. And that's crucial in high-stakes areas like healthcare or finance, where accuracy is everything.
Okay, totally convinced on the why. A model is only as good or as broad as its training data. So where does it all come from? What are the main sources for these incredibly diverse data sets? It sounds like we need to pull from everywhere.
We really do. The sources are incredibly varied. A huge chunk comes from unstructured data. That's things like text news articles, blogs, books, emails, images and videos from public repositories like ImageNet or YouTube, even medical imaging, audio to podcasts, call center logs, and of course, social media posts, comments, photos, videos. This kind of messy, unstructured data is actually super prevalent and really valuable for training many types of AI.
So just raw stuff from the internet, basically.
A lot of it, yeah. Then you have web data and APIs. This involves things like web scraping, pulling down product info, reviews, pricing from websites, or getting real-time data streams from APIs like the Twitter firehose or financial market data. There are also platforms like Bright Data that actually offer ready-made, curated data sets scraped from the web. And we rely heavily on open data repositories, government portals like data.gov, academic archives like the UCI Machine Learning Repository, Kaggle, Google Dataset Search, plus industry-specific collections in healthcare, finance, and so on.
Okay, so public web data, open repositories, what else?
Crowdsourced and human-labeled data is also vital. You need humans in the loop sometimes. Platforms like Amazon Mechanical Turk, Appen, Scale AI, they manage tasks where humans annotate data, like labeling objects in images or validating translations. This human touch helps the AI really understand the data.
Right, adding context.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And with the Internet of Things booming, sensor and IoT data is becoming huge. Data from wearables, smart home devices, industrial sensors in manufacturing or supply chains, that's another rich stream. And interestingly, sometimes we don't have enough real data, or we need more variety. So we turn to synthetic and augmented data.
Creating fake data.
Kind of, using AI itself techniques like GANs, generative adversarial networks.
Right, the AI cat and mouse game.
Exactly, or diffusion models, the ones that create images from noise. These can generate new, realistic-looking synthetic images, text, or audio to supplement real data sets. Or data augmentation techniques like rotating images, cropping them, paraphrasing text to expand existing data sets. And finally, don't forget internal enterprise data. Stuff from a company's own CRM systems, customer relationship management, or ERP system, enterprise resource planning, plus help desk log support tickets that provides really valuable company-specific insights.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot of different places. It really underscores how much data is needed. So with all these different types and sources, what are the best practices for actually using them effectively to fuel AI?
Good question. The best practices really revolve around a few key things. Combining multiple types of data, structured, unstructured, semi-structured, usually leads to richer, more robust models. Automating collection is important where possible using web scraping tools, APIs, ETL pipelines. Yeah. ETL is extract, transform, load, basically the automated plumbing that gets data ready for the AI.
Makes sense. Saves time.
Definitely. Rigorous validation and cleaning are absolutely non-negotiable. You have to ensure data quality and constantly monitor your data streams for weirdness, errors, or potential bias creeping in. And lastly, always, always document your sources. Where did this data come from? How is it processed? That's crucial for transparency, reproducibility, and debugging down the line. At the end of the day, that diversity in data pulled from all these sources is just fundamental to building AI that's accurate, fair, and actually ready for the complexities of the real world.
What an incredible journey we've been on today. Seriously eye-opening. We've really seen how AI isn't just like a tool for designers, but becoming a true partner in UX and UI. Speeding things up, sparking ideas, making things more personal, more accessible. And then we pulled back the curtain on what building with AI actually looks like, leveraging powerful platforms like Figma AI, Hugging Face, and all the others without needing that deep ML background. And finally, tying it all together, seeing why this vast, often invisible world of diverse data sources is the absolute lifeblood, the fuel for all this innovation. It's clear AI is adding just immense value already.
It really is evolving at an astonishing pace. And it leads to some interesting thoughts, doesn't it? Like, as these AI tools become even more integrated, more adaptive, learning from how we interact with them, maybe even generating truly novel solutions we didn't prompt for, what new creative frontiers do you think might open up? Not just in design, but maybe in fields we haven't even considered yet. What happens when AI becomes less of a tool and more of a genuine co-creator?
That is a powerful thought to chew on AI as co-creator, unlocking totally new domains. Well, we hope this deep dive has given you some food for thought, maybe some surprising facts, definitely practical insights. Perhaps you'll even look up some of the tools we mentioned. We really encourage you to continue your own exploration in this fascinating, fast-moving topic. Thanks so much for joining us.